My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? It's Thursday, September 5th, the day that the NFL is back. Anthony Haney over there, super producer, Craig Hoffman here. How you feeling on NFL is back day?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Love it. Our football coverage presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every penny. Our every plan versus AT&T. That'd be weird if you're saving on pennies. You're saving on plans with T-Mobile versus AT&T. And Verizon's calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. I did it, Anthony. I threw the piece of paper over my head because I felt like it. Because that's the kind of day it is. We're throwing caution to the wind. We're throwing football into your ears. We're throwing Dan Orlovsky at you at 5 o'clock, breaking down Jaden Daniels' debut this weekend against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What's up?
Let's get it.
All right. Should probably settle down to a radio show. If we're going to sprint for 3 hours, I don't know if we're going to make it.
You don't think so?
But we can get it. Hey, I did my favorite workout of my entire training cycle today, and it was the speed. It was good. Only took 30-second breaks, too. I was going to do 8 rounds. I did 12 because I felt that good.
Oh, yeah.
That's what kind of day I'm having, Anthony Haney.
Oh, my God. I could tell.
I'm running. We did the NWSL show earlier on my women's sports YouTube. Alex Morgan retired 30 minutes beforehand, so we have breaking news. So, like, that's the kind of day I'm having. We're just running. I'm probably going to pass out at 9:30 tonight and not make the second half of this game because all of a sudden my body's going to go, oh, you're done? Night-night.
That would add up.
But until then, we're running. We're running.
Up here, baby. Let's get it.
And we have a question for you at 301-230-0980. Who is the second most important commander to the season? Now, we did a countdown before I went to France, Anthony. And do you remember who number two was on that list?
I think it was Bobby Wagner.
I think you're incorrect.
Ah.
I think Bobby Wagner was number three.
All right.
My answer was Frankie Louvu. Because I think he is the most important defender on this team for reasons that I can get into if need be. If I ask you, though, Anthony Haney, because that technically is my answer, right? But we didn't get a chance to talk through it with all the people. So at 301-230-0980, we're diving right in today. Who is the second most important commander to the 2024 season behind the obvious? Every team's most important player is their quarterback. And Jaden carries even more of a burden and weight because he's a first-round rookie, second overall pick. And, you know, we're going to feel a certain type of way about the direction of this franchise based off how he does. That's just an inescapable reality. I don't mean to put that on him. It's just the truth of the circumstances. But who is the next most important commander for this season?
This guy, in my mind, was also on our list, but I think he was towards the bottom. He was like either 9 or 10. But I'm going to go with Brandon Coleman, and I think the short-term and long-term future success of Brandon Coleman will dictate a lot of what we can do. And that's off of, you know, him being inserted in the starting lineup. When we made the list, we didn't know if he was going to start or not. Like, we knew he was in a position battle. But now that we see on the official roster that he's going to be the starting left tackle, if he can go out there and, you know, be that stalwart left tackle for, you know, years and or a decade to come, I think that's going to set up the success of Jaden Daniels for many years to come. You need somebody that's going to be able to protect your blind side. So if he can go out there and have success, and even if you know he struggled, you know he has hiccups, he's in a tough division already. Pass rush is out the juju. So I think every week, week in, week out, he's going to have a good test. And if he can, you know, withstand some of those tests, have ups and downs, but progress along the way, I think having a starting left tackle and a starting quarterback that are both rookies for our team success for years to come, I think that's super important. So I would go Brandon Coleman.
I don't disagree with anything you just said in terms of the importance of Coleman for the long term and like what it would mean to the franchise if they got a franchise left tackle in the third round of the same draft that they took their franchise quarterback first. However, the reason that we put him, or that I put him, I think it was ninth on that list. Maybe it was like seventh, but I'm pretty sure it was ninth, was the floor underneath him. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday as well in some different contexts in terms of best case, worst case for Coleman. And it goes back to what the worst case is, which is that he gets benched in favor of Cornelius Lucas. And while that is suboptimal, to say the least, we know that Cornelius Lucas is a serviceable swing tackle. He can be game planned around. It does limit your offense, his lack of mobility and his lack of movement. But he's solid at the things he does. They know what he is, which is part of the reason why they're trying to put someone else ahead of him. But at least it's not like you're dead in the water. It's not like, you know, some of these other positions where, like, if Frankie Louvu goes out, who's the backup Frankie Louvu? I guess Jordan McGee is going to do his best impression, but like, that is a guy that you paid big money in a free agent contract compared to, I think McGee was a fifth round rookie. So it is a bit of a, like, to me, to say that he is the most, or the second most important guy behind Jaden belies the reality that there is a safety net underneath Coleman that even, like, we just don't know. Realistically, Anthony, if we were to say we need to win a game tomorrow or win a game on Sunday and it was the last game that was ever played, we're not talking about trying to develop a guy for a future. Are we even sure that Brandon Coleman is better than Cornelius Lucas right now? I know the things that he can do better. I know the skill set of why they're starting him and the appeal, and I am all on board with that. But we truly don't know if he's actually even better right now than Cornelius Lucas or Trent Scott, for that matter, because we haven't really seen Brandon Coleman play in the preseason, nevertheless a regular season game.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of questions definitely surrounding the guy, but I think this season, I don't think people have lofty expectations for the Commanders. Like, if we go out there and go 8-9, 7-10, I think a lot of people will consider that a successful season. But I guess it wouldn't be fair, but I guess I am looking, you know.
You're taking the longer view.
I'm taking the longer view as opposed to, you know, the immediate. So, again, I'm just looking at his progression. Like, if he goes out there and proves to everybody that he is better than a Cornelius Lucas, he is better than a Trent Scott, he's better than Andrew Wiley, things of that nature, I think that's going to, you know, have a lot of people optimistic about what we could be, because guess what? We can build around this guy right here. We have Sam Cosmi locked up for the future. So that's two guys on the offensive line. If they pan out, we'll know for certain what they are behind, in front of, you know, our rookie quarterback.
Not only that, you would not know, you don't have to spend high draft capital that guy next year. And to say, like, okay, left tackle, check. Now you can spend bigger money on wide receiver, corner, edge, or first round pick on wide receiver, corner, edge, other positional or premium positions. So if that's your rationale, I don't think you're wrong. If you're looking just through the lens of 2024, there's other guys that make the argument for. Yeah. What about you? And by you, I mean out there on the phones, not Anthony. He just made his argument. 301-230-0980. We will get to the calls. Who is the second most important Commander on the 2024 team? That is next on the Hoffman Show.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming on YouTube, too, if you like, at the Team 980. But you can watch on your phone, your tablet, your smart TV, your laptop, all the other places that YouTube is. I'm sure there's other places. That's the main ones, though. But we're there at the Team 980. Search us, and we're here live every single day from 4 to 7. And we're taking your calls at 301-230-0980, answering a very simple question. Outside of Jaden Daniels, who's the most important commander for 2024? Let's get to the phones, and let's start off with Matt. Matt, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show. Who is your most important commander not named Jaden Daniels for 2024?
First off, I just want to say I love you guys' show. I listen every day now.
Thank you.
First time calling in on a podcast or any radio show ever. But for me, I think it's John Allen. And I know John is not what he used to be, but he's still part of the old guard. He's a team leader, and I think this is going to be a big year for him. I think last year was hard on everybody, but I think John is going to show up this year, ready to play. It's going to be important for Jaden and the offense to stay on the field, and that means the defense getting off the field quickly. John brings a lot of aggressiveness, toughness. He's vocal, and like I said, he's a leader. I think this is going to be a big year for him.
Matt, great call. I totally agree with you on John being super important. And outside of Luvu, I think he might be the most important guy on this defense. Thanks for the call and appreciate the kind words as well. I think you make a case for Wagner. I think you make a case for Duron over John. We did in our countdown. But if you want to take Allen and say, okay, what's the case for John Allen? One, he's already done a lot of work, right? For the guys that did remain, John Allen buying in and being a leader and not being like, oh, I don't know about this new staff, and being super bought in, ridiculously important. His voice carries weight in that room, and he has, as far as we know, used it to bring people along in the direction that the coaches and Adam Peters and ultimately Josh Harris want this thing to go. Two, I think John Allen, like we hear this every year, right? Oh, so-and-so came in the best shape of his life. I took one look at John Allen and Daron Payne when they got back and was like, or when they got back from the summer and went, holy crap, those dudes do not look the same as they did in years past. And it's not that I ever looked at John Allen and was like, oh, he's out of shape. But these dudes came ready. Whatever the hell they were asked to do this offseason, they did. Whatever it is that they participated in from an offseason program with Chad Englehart and that strength and conditioning program, it is very, very clear they took what they needed to do seriously. They came in like cut up, super fit, and ready to go. And I remember talking to one offensive lineman during camp after practice, and he was like, John Allen is the hardest. And this is a guy who's been around the league and played in other places. And he goes, John Allen plays harder than any defensive tackle I've ever played against in my life. Practicing against him is miserable. It sucks. Like, it's so good because I get to get better every day, but it sucks going against that guy because he plays so hard every single snap. And if you get that kind of effort from your leaders, that can translate not only into, obviously, good play, playing hard is a prerequisite to success in this league, because you're, no one's good enough to, you know, half bake an attempt and come out with a fully cooked meal. But it also is the kind of thing that you look at, you know, that guy next to you, and you know he's going to go hard. You're not going to let your brother down. And so there's a lead by example element of how hard he plays that I think has a trickle down effect to the rest of the team, and especially considering the go hard play style that Dan Quinn wants to implement, that is a perfect fit. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Kurt in Hagerstown. Kurt, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show. Hey, Kurt.
Hey, Hoffman, man. Big fan. First time caller.
Appreciate it. All right, so who's your second most important commander? Of course, the first being Jaden Daniels.
I'm going to go outside the box a little bit. I'm going to say Quan Martin.
Okay.
Especially with the Quan Martin.
Yeah. Why Quan?
I'm going to say him because the defensive back being like the weak link right now from what I see, I think he's our best corner, our best cover guy. And if they use him the way I would use him, which is kind of like Saren Steele's your nickel corner, but Quan's kind of like that free safety that can go down and play nickel corner. He could play outside. He could kind of do it all. And I see him doing that on one side, Saren Steele doing that on the other side, and kind of like being the quarterbacks for the defensive backs. I see a lot of safeties on the field with Chin and Defoe because they're just powerhouses. They could play that shallow intermediate and have our two, you know, best nickel guys kind of caught making the calls. And this way it kind of takes a lot of pressure off of a St. Juice and Forbes on the outside. I wouldn't put him on the top receiver ever, man. If anything, I would put Quan on somebody like A.J. Brown, and I'd have Defoe rolling over that to that side every time and put Forbes or St. Juice on everybody's number two.
Kurt, it's an interesting thought. And I just don't think realistically we're going to see Quan matched up on the outside on anybody, but I do like your point a lot and appreciate your call about the idea that, you know, we think of Saner still as the nickel and Quan is the free safety. And like, to be very clear, I think they're going to play mostly those roles. But the way a lot of these defenses work now, they kind of rock and roll is what they call it, the safeties. And you could do that around Jeremy Chinn in a way that's really interesting, where you could just kind of say, hey, Mike Sanderstill, you're really smart. And if there's a late motion and a down, we might just have Quan assume the nickel role and you roll out of that. You know, and there's rules to how that would go down that you could accomplish with this personnel. It's an interesting thought. It's one that I'm sure has crossed Joe Witt Jr.'s mind. But I think Quan also, realistically, because Mikey is going to be playing the nickel Chin is going to be playing a lot in the box, like Quan's going to wind up playing a lot of deep safety. And I am very curious about his range back there. I know that he's fast. I know that he's instinctual. He's physical. There's so much to like. But in a way, I do almost like him more as kind of a, hey, heads up over a tight end kind of guy, as opposed to I'm covering the middle third of the field with a bunch of range. Like, that is an area where I've got questions. That doesn't mean that I don't think he can do it. We haven't seen it before. I do think there'll be a lot of three safety looks, and the third safety will be Percy Butler, not necessarily Defoe. And Butler has that kind of range, that 4.3 speed over the top. But it is going to be interesting. Like, one of my most fascinating things for this year, one of my biggest questions is how they deploy these defensive backs. And Quan plays an enormously important cog in that. So if you want to say he's the most important player on the defense, I think he was number four on our list or something like that. He was high up there on the list that we did towards the start of training camp. So I don't mind that call at all. 301-230-0980. Let's go to Dominic, who's got another DB. Dominic, who do you think is the second most important commander this year behind Jaden Daniels?
Hey, Craig, thanks for taking the call, as always.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, for me, it's Emmanuel Forbes. And the reason why is you have basically put a target, you know, on him. Now, you on the last depth chart, you made him number one. So, you know, he's going into a make or break year, and you cannot ask Jaden Daniels in the offense to score 30 plus points a game. It's not going to work that way. And if you do, because you can't keep up with number one receivers, I mean, you're going to see it Sunday with Mike Evans, you know, a guy who's has what, 5 straight 1,000 yard seasons. You know, if he's burning you over the top, it's going to be a long day on Sunday. It's going to be a long day against Jamar Chase on Monday night. It's going to be a long day against CD. The list goes on. So my guy is Emmanuel Forbes, and he's got to come. He's got to show. He's got to be that one of those top corners. Right now, we don't have a number one corner. On paper, we don't. Sure. And if we don't, it's going to be a long year.
Yeah, well, so here's the thing, Dominic. Like, I hear you, and thanks for your call, as always. I think it's thoughtful. I think it's smart. I don't think it's irrational. I just think that I don't know that fans here that watch mostly the Commanders and don't watch as intently other places realize how much scheme matters and how much coaching matters to defensive backs. I would argue that it is more important to defensive backs than any other position on the defense. Like, at the end of the day, yes. Can you enhance pass rushers greatly by how you utilize them? Absolutely. Can you give linebackers really easy to execute responsibilities or stupidly hard and confusing and really overwhelming in terms of the grass that they have to cover responsibilities? Yeah, you can. But like, eventually a team's going to run duo and or some inside zone, and a linebacker's going to have to get downhill, get off a block and make a tackle. And that's a huge part of their responsibility, is to not let that stuff get out into the third level of the defense and really to be at or behind the line of scrimmage to make tackles. If you're a DB, you are so reliant on the responsibilities that you're given by your coaches and the positions they put you in. And we can talk about the lack of technique soundness that Emmanuel Forbes had last year, but a huge part of that is he was being asked to do too much. We need you to cover the flat and the in and the out and deep and the post. Like, it's, and by the way, be wary of that bubble screen, and we need you to run support. Like, there's too many things that they were being asked to do by the corners last year. And I think just by the nature of simplifying responsibilities, they will be so much better this year. And Joe Witt Jr., I think, has an understanding of where some of the limitations are, and there will be safety help over the top. They will play some cover two looks that they have bounced in and out of with Dan Quinn over the years. He's used to play all single high in Seattle, went to a lot of cover two. Now he's back to some more mix. I think they will mix up their coverages quite a bit. And are there going to be situations where you're in man-to-man? Sure. But how do you marry that with your pressure packages? And I think that this staff understands that better, which is ultimately why my guy, to bring it all the way back, is Luvu. He's got to be an impact pass rusher. And if he's not, I don't know that they have someone else who can be. Dorrance Armstrong is obviously the next best guy, probably. Dante Fowler could have a nice year because he's a professional pass rusher. We'll see what happens with Jamin and obviously Javonte Jean-Baptiste. But like, they have got to get pressure. And if they do that, which they didn't have a plan for last year, their blitz package stunk. They never did anything up front. No twists, no games. It was just straight rush four. We have these four hosses. We think they can get home. They didn't help them. What happens if you help your pass rush? What happens if you use Quan Martin and Jeremy Chinn as blitzers? Like, these are the things that need to happen to make Emmanuel Forbes a better player and to make Benjamin St. Juice a better player. There's stuff they have to do too, but the circumstances matter a lot, and the circumstances are a lot better this year. When we get back, Dan Pizzuta is going to join us. He used to write for Sharp Football, now writes for the 33rd team, does a great job covering the league. We'll get his first impressions of the Commanders, as Dan's going to join us throughout the year. We'll get his first impressions of the Commanders, kind of a baseline expectation. Plus, we'll take our first dive into the game tonight, game tomorrow. NFL is here, and we're talking about it on your home for everything football, the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, and it's Dan Day. That's Anthony, did you know that it's Dan Day on the Hoffman Show?
Now that you've said that, it makes sense, so yes.
Yeah, Dan Orlovsky is going to join us coming up at 5 o'clock, but right now it is our pleasure to welcome in Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team. He's a writer. I've read a bunch of his stuff over the years at other places, including Sharp Football. He's now with the 33rd team, and the plan is, Dan, for you to join us all year long, so welcome to your maiden voyage on the Hoffman Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's just put it all out there. We'll get to some of the games, the primetime game tonight, tomorrow night, league-wide stuff in a second. But We got to get the fan base, the listenership, a base here of where you are on the home team. Because I think what's interesting, Dan, in covering this team is there's a lot of like rumblings within the league or certain insiders, certain writers that are really high on the Commanders, that they really like Jaden Daniels. They believe some of the hype that's coming out of Ashburn. Then there's others that are like, this team was 4-12 last year or 4-13, and they still stink. Where are you on the they still stink to believing the hype meter when it comes to the Washington Commanders entering 2024?
This might be a slightly boring answer, but it's somewhere in between, I think. I think there are a lot of things to like, and I do believe when you kind of look at what Jaden Daniels can bring to this offense, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we just kind of saw that in the first preseason game where we had that big throw. Some of my concerns are going to be what this offensive structure is and how well the Cliff Kingsbury offense fits with what Jaden Daniels does, because I think we also saw there were a lot of, you know, screens and RPOs. And if I kind of have some like PTSD of what Kingsbury was in Arizona, it was a lot of like horizontal throws that didn't necessarily take advantage of a quarterback's big arm. But I'm expecting a very good run game because I think Cliff can design that. I think that's going to help with Jaden Daniels and a lot of the things that they have on the ground in Washington now. The defense is going to be interesting because they brought in a lot of veterans. Whether that's going to be good, I'm not totally sure, but I also don't expect it to be a unit that is so based on miscommunication like it really was the past couple of years. So I think there's definitely a baseline there. So I think just kind of how this offense gels early in the season, I think is going to really be what the ceiling of this Washington team can be for the 2024 season.
Dan, I don't know if you were trying to be funny there, but the line, this is a defense based off miscommunication, so perfectly describes the Ron Rivera, Jack Del Rio era that it almost moves me to tears. You mentioned the PTSD from Cliff in Arizona and a lot of the screens, and we've definitely seen a lot of that in camp. You never know what to believe in the preseason because everything's so vanilla, but it's certainly right. Something that we saw in training camp, and I think will be a big part of this. Screens can be great. It's a way to get the protect your quarterback, get the ball out of his hands. Obviously, there's some risk there. What is it about Cliff's screen game that you didn't necessarily like the deployment of or that you hope evolves into a better version in D.C. with Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, it's very static. And I think that's kind of one of the things about Cliff's offense in general, where he is going to use pace a lot. And I think we saw that in Arizona, where it was a lot of hurry up, but that also stops things from, you know, moving a lot before the snap. We see a lot of offenses now, like a Miami, they're all motion. That's how they use, that is their kind of secret weapon in the ways they are going to keep defenses off balance. And Cliff Kingsbury likes to use pace, so everything is going to go fast. But that does not leave a lot of time for players to be moving around before the snap between plays. So it's very static and it keeps everyone in the same spots. And then when you just look at what the horizontal type of stretch is in that offense, it's not really, you know, pushing a lot of things into the intermediate area, which is one of the things where, you know, that was a concern of whether Jaden Daniels read the middle of the field in the intermediate area that well in college. And, you know, you really don't blame him because he never really needed to. When you can throw a slot fade to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. down the sidelines outside the numbers, you don't really need to be living in the middle of the field all that often. But this is also, it's not an offense that I think from what we've seen with Cliff, that it's going to be opening up that area, you know, schematically and in the structure of the offense. So I just think there are areas of the field that are very valuable that just don't get pushed as much in a Cliff Kingsbury offense, at least from what we've seen in Arizona. I don't know if this is something that, you know, he's been working on a little bit, but the USC offense last year when he was, you know, very involved in that passing game also kind of left Caleb Williams with a lot of things that, like, he needed to be out of structure because the structure of the offense wasn't all that great. So I'm not super optimistic, but there are things that I did like about it. But I just think we need to see a little more expansion of what some of those passing concepts are going to be in order for this passing game to really work well.
Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. One kind of lingering question that we're not going to have a distinctive answer to until November by definition is, can Cliff evolve? Because he is notoriously a hot starter, and then teams seem to figure it out, and his teams have failed down the stretch. Texas Tech, Arizona, on down the list. What is it that teams latch onto, and how do other really good offensive coordinators avoid that final, let's call it third or final quarter of the season rut that Kingsbury has routinely found himself in?
Yeah, I think it kind of ends up being something where when something doesn't work, I think he kind of falls back on the things that he does believe are going to be the staples. And kind of like I said, when you're using pace as the thing that you are using as your mismatch, if there's only a certain set of plays, really, that you're going to be able to run from that. So if you are running kind of the same things over and over and over, defenses then by the end of the year are going to be able to kind of get a sense of what those plays are going to be, how those plays are going to be targeted, and you kind of set the defense to stopping some of those the concepts. So, and then the pace later in the year, if you don't really have those changeups, is going to be something that isn't as advantageous as you get later into the year. So the thing about Cliff is he does like come into the season with some very like cool things, and there usually are a couple of changeups in those first few weeks of the season. But again, as you know, whether it's an injury or something, because sometimes those did pop up in Arizona too. So they were kind of just working with what they could work with, and then the just expansion of the offense just wasn't as much as you would kind of like to see. So if they can kind of stay healthy, they see some things that maybe should be able to allow them to build on what this offense is going to be, then maybe there's, you know, some change and he can evolve within the season. But that's something like you said, we're not going to be able to know until October, November. And that's something I'm going to want to see a little bit before I believe in it.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us. One Commanders defensive question, or I guess it's quasi-Commanders. It certainly applies, but it's kind of leaning on your knowledge of league trends, Dan, is the volatility at the cornerback position, which the Commanders fans are hoping strikes the uptick this year in Washington after a brutal season last year for Benjamin St. Juice and Emmanuel Forbes. But when you look around the league and try to suss out the impact that coaching has both schematically and technique-wise, you know, clarity of assignment, all those kinds of things on the cornerback position. Would you agree with me if I said that position is more subject to coaching than anything else on defense? And then if you do agree with that, is that ultimately a good sign for the Commanders in 2024?
Yeah, I think you probably could say that, because I think it does depend a lot on, you know, how these cornerbacks are taught and, you know, what they're really expected to do in coverage. Like you said, I mean, when you kind of go back to what, you know, Dan Quinn did with Dallas, I think he did encourage his corners to be very aggressive and kind of jump jump some routes. And I think we saw that, you know, when Trayvon Diggs had a lot of interceptions in his big year 2022. We saw that with Deron Bland last year. So I think that is certainly a coaching point when you see two players like that who are you know, very similar styles, which it did give up some very big plays when being that aggressive did not work on the other end of that. But I think there's going to be, you know, a hit and miss there. And when you have some of those big plays in the turnovers and you can create those, I do think that does help. So that is going to be one of the things that's really interesting with, I think, this cornerback room. Like, I did like Emmanuel Forbes a lot coming out in college. He was a physical corner that I think just kind of was a little hesitant in how he was going to play, how physical he could be. And I do think that the coaching style of what the secondary is going to be asked for should help a little bit. And that definitely is, you know, a position that just in general, because coverage is so reactive, like you can do a lot of things well and still give up a reception. That's why, especially when you look at like coverage stats and things, it's very hard to be good in coverage for a sustained period of time, even for some of the best cornerbacks in the league. So I do think coaching does play a part. And I do think some of the coaching in Washington should help that the guys that are currently on that Commanders team.
Well, certainly can't hurt based off last year. Certainly, that like there literally is no room to go down. Okay, tonight you got Ravens, Chiefs, NFL season opener. I think this is a These teams are fascinating. The Chiefs arguably have more talent than they've had in the entire Mahomes era, and they're the two-time defending champions. Meanwhile, you got the Ravens bringing in Derrick Henry, and you know the change up at the coordinator defensively as Mike McDonald goes to Seattle. So there's some pretty significant changes on not only with him but down the staff. They lost a couple other guys as well. Anthony Weaver leaving for Miami. If you look at it from the Baltimore side, the addition of Henry does what for Lamar Jackson coming off of an MVP season? Obviously, it's hard to play a lot better, but how does the offense functionally change with that kind of back next to him?
Yeah, I think it really opens up a lot for both of those players involved. If you're sitting in shotgun or pistol, which I think Baltimore will use a little more of, it's going to be tempting to sit in a heavy box for this defense because you do want to stop the run. But if that's going to be the case, then you're going to have these one-on-ones on the outside that we know Lamar can take advantage of, or that's going to leave some room to scramble if he's kind of able to do that too. But if you're a little scared of what Jackson can do in the run and you're going to play a little off, you're going to use the light box, which I think we saw kind of the Ravens, because light boxes and things like that are really personnel set. If you're using 11 personnel with three wide receivers and you're spreading those guys out, it's going to be difficult for a defense to stack the box. So if the Ravens are going to be in that personnel, be a little wider, and then you have a light box for Derrick Henry, there's going to be a lot of room there for him to be running too. So I think it's just going to give them a little more balance, and they don't have to be too forced into one thing that they have to do, which I think they kind of have been in the past a little bit, especially when there wasn't really the wide receivers working quite as well as they had been. So I just think having those two players in the backfield together, and then when you start looking at the zone read and read options, I think it's kind of impossible for a defense to guess right when there's going to be either a handoff to Henry or a keeper from Lamar Jackson. There's really no right answer there for a defense. So I just think the dynamic they have in the run game is really going to help, and I think that's going to end up really opening up some of the things they can do in the passing game, off play action in the middle of the field. And I really think that's just going to be a dynamic group that they have there.
Yeah, and of course, Mark Andrews, one of their best targets, occupying that space there in the middle. Same kind of concept in a different way on the other side. For years now, teams have been like, we are not giving up deep stuff to Mahomes. Last year, they started to clamp down a little bit more on Travis Kelce. It took the Chiefs a while, but they eventually figured it out. Dan, there are D coordinators making seven figures trying to figure out what the heck to do with the Chiefs. I figure we might as well just give our advice for free on the radio. If you are Baltimore tonight and everyone else in the AFC West and on the Chiefs schedule moving forward, what is the thing? I know there was was it Matabike or someone the other day that was like, oh, we just got to make him one dimensional. And it's like, yeah, good luck with that with Mahomes and the way Andy Reid's calling plays and designs an offense and as good as he is. But if there's one thing that you just absolutely cannot let happen against the Chiefs, what's that thing?
Man, now, like you said, if there was, if I had one good answer for that, I think I'd be making a lot more money than I would be.
Hey, man, plans are easy. Executing's hard. Hey, if you just do this, you didn't do the thing that I said. That's the beauty of our jobs, is there's no actual consequences for our analysis.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things with Mahomes is you just cannot really let him settle into knowing what you're doing on defense. And I think we've seen with some of the better defenses that have been able to kind of slow him down, right? Because you don't stop Mahomes. You just really, it's the whole, you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. It really is true. And I think the Ravens kind of did that in a little bit in the second half of the AFC Championship game last year. And it's a lot of just kind of changing the picture. They did a lot of those, simulated pressures, which you're showing, five or six guys on the line of scrimmage. You're showing a blitz, but only four come, but they're not necessarily the four that you believe would come, in a more traditional pass rush. So you're changing up some of those looks. Cincinnati back a couple years ago when they were able to kind of slow Mahomes down a little bit, it was a lot of you were either blitzing or you were dropping eight, only rushing three. So I think it's a lot of changing up those looks and never just settling into one thing that Mahomes can really figure out. Because once he does that, he's a guy who will, sit and over the past couple of seasons when teams are starting to play too high, he'll sit and just pick you apart. He'll have have the one of the lowest ADOTs in the league if he needs to, and do that. But then if you're going to be aggressive and you have those downfield, he'll have those, you know, plays out of structure where he'll make something happen down the field. So if you can just kind of change up a lot of the looks, and I think, well, you know, a team like Baltimore, and we'll see what they bring from the McDonald defense into this year, because I think, you know, schemes like that will certainly help, and things like we saw from what Cincinnati is doing. Those are the type of defenses that I think will, you know, help slow him down. But again, there's really no stopping him because he just, you know, figures out a right answer for everything eventually.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show, going to join us on Thursdays all season long. We got a Friday football game to talk about this week, though, Dan, that we won't have many of those. Eagles, yeah, and Packers. And my simple question is, like, Are you up or down on the Eagles? I'm gonna leave it open ended. Are you up or down on the Eagles?
I'm hesitant. I will say that I would really like to see how both sides of the ball really play out for them, because you bring in two new coordinators, but neither one of them were relatively successful in where they were last year. I think there are going to be some, you know, more interesting things with Kellen Moore that we will see for this offense that will help him out. I'm just not sure what this defense is going to be from, you know, personnel wise. They're just not as deep at pass rusher as, you know, they used to be over the past few years. Corner is going to be very highly volatile also. So they are just kind of a wait and see team for me also to see really how these two new philosophies on each side of the ball are really going to match for them this season.
So I'm a big, like, the vibes are just off. There's something wrong there with Sirianni and Hurts, and there just seems to be a disconnect. Like, they're stupid talented, and it might all work out. I just look at them as opposed to, like, the cohesion and everything that's going on in Green Bay, LaFleur's ability to just create a building where everybody seems to be able to succeed. Like, as you've done this over the course of your year, so much of what you've done, and obviously when you were with Sharp, like, super-duper numbers adjacent and looking into data, and, like, that is so valuable. How often do you take a step back in your analysis and just be like, I like vibes here, and not to go like full vibes guy, but like to go like, okay, some of these numbers might not wind up adding up because there's something in the building that isn't working.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's, I feel like I, you know, not to go full vibes, like you said, but, you know, it's always kind of marrying, you know, some of those numbers and the context of what brings it. And yeah, like you said, especially over the back half of last season, it's just, this doesn't seem great. But then you kind of look at, if you are going to be a little more optimistic, you look at all of the things that went wrong for them. And, you know, Jalen Hurts was still a top 10 quarterback by, like, EPA per play, which is something that I think you can build on a little bit. So, but, like, because they have all that talent, you still do have some of these outs that have a much higher margin for error, right? When you're throwing to an A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and now you add a Saquon Barkley, you have Dallas Goedert, that is still a stacked offense. So you do have a much larger margin for error when, even if things aren't completely going right, because just by the talent alone, they should still be able to make plays. But yeah, like you said, I think there still is, there's a lot of work that kind of needs to be done for you to, like, really feel good about what these Eagles are going to be this year.
All right, Dan, before we let you go, are you up for a little sports radio fun here?
Sure.
Okay, so as I was putting together the graphic that we've been putting up on the YouTube stream while you're talking, I came across a profile that I'm like, that looks like a young Dan. Do I have it correct that you were a gymnast at the Temple University?
Yes, I was.
That is, one, incredible. Like, I have so much, as a fitness athletic person myself, I have so much respect for the what gymnasts can do. But my dumb sports radio question is, at your absolute peak, how many pull-ups could you do?
Probably a lot. I don't know if I ever, you know, fully maxed out on pull-ups.
Yeah.
But, you know, a usual, you know, type of workout probably would have been, as part of a workout, would have been at least, you know, three sets of, you know, 25. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, quite a bit. Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that I was doing, you know, was with body weight. So, you know, I wasn't, when I was working out in that fashion, wasn't a lot of, you know, max benching or anything.
Of course.
It was a lot of body weight. So yeah, it was doing a lot of, you know, pull-ups and push-ups and things like that. So probably a higher number than maybe like I would have been able to do just in terms of like straight weightlifting.
Yeah. So Anthony, have you ever done 25 straight pull-ups in your life?
In high school.
In high school? Okay. I feel like when I was like 8, because you don't weigh anything when you're 8. And you're just like, you're a dumb elementary school kid. You're doing the test. And you're like, I don't know. 1, 2, 3. Definitely cannot do 25. That is impressive. Dan, I will come up with more dumb questions in our interviews and hopefully smart ones at the beginning. This was great and very much look forward to doing this all season long. Appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, fantastic. I appreciate you having me on.
That's Dan Pizzuto, everybody. He's with the 33rd team. They do a great job. They have all kinds of former execs and coaches and also a great slew of writers, including Dan and his colleagues. I enjoyed that, Anthony. I'm excited to talk to Dan all season long. He's really smart.
No, he really is. And he has a lot of good energy.
Yeah, great energy. I was almost like, how we can save like what was the longest you ever did a handstand question for next week?
Oh, yeah. He got
Could you do a handstand, period?
I can do a handstand. Not for a long time, though.
Should we put that on our punishment list? You have to try to do a handstand.
You've never attempted to do one?
I mean, I've attempted to do one. I'm saying, but like, we should add dumb human tricks to our potential punishments for our competition Wednesday picks.
I think you do 10 handstand push-ups with your feet against the wall.
Oh, that's just got to make sure we don't do it right after we eat.
Yeah.
That could be bad. Okay, that's enough of that. More smart football talking from people named Dan next for Not My Beat today. Ladies and gentlemen, in 5 minutes, Dan Orlovsky.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.